Hey, if you would, turn to Genesis chapter 22, and we will continue from there. Last week we finished up pretty much Genesis 22, the story of Abraham being told to offer Isaac, his son, and the lessons that we learned from there, and God's promise to Abraham because of verse 18, because thou hast obeyed my voice. And that's what God desires of us, simple obedience. Sometimes we make it way more difficult than it is, but that's what God asks, is obedience to him and his word. The last part of chapter 22 talks about Abraham's relatives, as far as Nahor, his brother, and his wife and children. And here we see the first mention of Rebekah, who we're going to talk about in the coming weeks. And she's the only female mentioned in this list of men here, but that's how they do genealogies pretty much, is the men are listed, the ladies are not. But we know that Rebekah is listed here because she is referred to later. We get into chapter 23, and we see, and Sarah was 107 and 20 years old. These were the years of life of Sarah. So Sarah, well, verse 2, and Sarah died in Kirjath Arba, the same as Hebron, in the land of Canaan. And Abraham came to mourn for Sarah and to weep for her. So we see Sarah at 127 years old passes away. Just for reference sake, that makes Abraham how much? 137. Remember, Abraham's 10 years older than Sarah is. This makes Isaac how old? Pardon me? 37, because Isaac was born when Abraham was 100 years old.
And when Sarah was 90.
90, yes. it's interesting. Do you still have this? Anybody still carrying that around? That chart? No? Okay. I looked at this briefly. And on the chart, it gives you the date of birth for all these in the line of Christ from, well, this is from Adam to Abraham. But if you look at the chart, it's interesting. Sarah dies approximately, according to this, 2145, which is the date. Anyhow, if you look back, it's interesting to see that still alive, at least on the chart, well, we know Abraham is still alive, but on the chart, Eber, I don't know if you remember Eber, but he's in that line. He's still alive. And you know who else is still alive when Sarah dies? Shem. Remember who Shem is? Noah's son that was on the ark and went through that whole situation? He's still alive at this point in time when Sarah dies. Matter of fact, he's still alive for another 13 years after Sarah passes away. Not that it really matters to our story today, but it's interesting to see that all the way from the flood, all these generations, and Shem is still alive. Actually, Shem lived 600 years, and it was shortly after Shem that the age spans or the lifespans changed. But anyhow, interesting information as we get to Sarah passing away. Some other things. Sarah is the only woman in the Bible whose age is mentioned when she passes away. Did you know that? No? Okay. Me either, till I found out. You know, it will say so-and-so died, but it doesn't give their age, but as far as the women go, but Sarah is the only one. Someone turned to 1 Peter chapter 3, verse 6 for me and read that. I'm going to take a break from talking. 1 Peter 3, 6.
Even as Sarah obeyed Abraham, calling him Lord, whose daughter ye are, as long as ye do well, and are not afraid of any maintenance.
Okay. It says, whose daughters you are if you do well. Basically referring to believers and saying that they are, in a way, daughters of Sarah. Interesting in 1 Peter that it says that. After all, Abraham is many times referred to as the father of Israelites, the father of faith, all those. But it's interesting that Sarah is referred to as the mother of believers, those who do well in 1 Peter. Also another interesting fact before we continue on, Sarah is the first one in the line of Christ who dies in the land of Canaan, in the promised land. Right? Yeah. Because everybody else, well, except for those other ones, but since that promise. Anyhow, so Sarah dies, and Abraham, verse 3, and Abraham stood up from before his dead and spake unto the sons of Heth, saying, I am a stranger and a sojourner with you. Give me a possession of a burying place with you that I may bury my dead out of my sight. And the children of Heth said to him, saying, let's stop for a second. So Abraham is looking for a what? A burial site, right? It's interesting as we go through this that Abraham purchases a piece of land. Do you realize this is up to this point, this is the only piece of land that Abraham will own? Because he's a what in the land? A sojourner. So he moves around here and there. He might stay in a place for a long time, but he doesn't own that land. As a matter of fact, Abraham never did own any land, did he? He just moved around, except for this one piece of land that he's going to buy here. Interesting. The only piece of land that Abraham really owned was for a burial site. So let's continue. And the children of Heth answered Abraham, saying unto him, hear us, my Lord, thou art a mighty prince among us. In the choice of our sepulchres, bury thy dead. None of us shall withhold from thee his sepulchre, but that thou mayest bury the dead. In other words, what are they saying? Yeah, we'll give you one, and you can just bury her there. It's interesting, they say, thou art a mighty prince. It's interesting here, the word mighty actually means of the supreme God or special possession of God. I don't know why it's translated mighty. Basically, they're saying that Abraham is a prince of God or a prince, an important person who is a special possession of God, of the supreme God. In other words, they recognize that God looked after Abraham, that God provided for him, that he was special to God, and God took care of him. in a way, as you stop and think, we'll stop here. In a way, if you stop and think about it, God has already prepared these individuals that Abraham is talking to by bringing to their realization how important Abraham is to the living, supreme, almighty God. They had come to that conclusion on their own. Abraham didn't have to say anything, but they saw how God treated Abraham in the different situations he had been in and how God had provided. So God had already prepared the way as he talked to them. So basically they're saying, hey, you can have one of our sepulchers. You wouldn't own it. You wouldn't really be renting it, but you'd be born by more like you're borrowing it from us and can use it kind of thing. Abraham says, verse 7, and Abraham stood up and bowed himself to the people of the land, even to the children of Heth. So He's taking a position of submission, bowing himself to them, even though he quite possibly is the most important person in that area, because we know that Abraham is quite well-to-do, don't we? God has provided for Abraham. He's blessed Abraham, and he is a mighty person within that area. So he's a very important person, but he bows himself to them, to the people of the land, even unto the children of Heth. By the way, I forgot. Who are the children of Heth? Now that we're talking about them, do you know? Heth is the son of Canaan. Remember who Canaan is? Canaan is the son of Ham. There you go. So the son of Ham was Canaan, and Heth is one of his descendants, and we're talking to the sons of. So he's, well, most everybody's a relative in one way or another, but that's the connection with the sons of Heth. They're from the line of Ham. So anyhow, so he bows himself to them, even to the children of Heth, and he communed with them, saying, "If it be your mind that I should bury my dead out of my sight, hear me and entreat for me to Ephron the son of Zohar." So entreat means here, I want you to go be a go-between. I want you to go talk to him and tell him my situation so that I can talk to him about purchasing a piece of land. Who is this Ephron? That's okay. I don't know either. I looked up his name, and this is basically the only place that we see his name mentioned anywhere. How about the son of Zohar? Anybody know who Zohar is? That's okay, because his name is only mentioned here as well. Any place else it's mentioned has to do with this story going on here. And Ephron, there is a Mount Ephron that talks about later in Scripture, but again, it doesn't say anything about this individual. So whoever they are, they lived among these people and owned this land. Verse 9, that he may give me the cave of Machpelah, which he hath, which is at the end of his field, for as much money as it's worth, he shall give it to me for a possession of a burying place amongst you. So in other words, Abraham says, no, I don't want to rent or borrow a gravesite or a burial place. I want to possess it. Stan, did you have a question or comment? Yeah.
So he's got to be prominent. He's got just the name we don't know, right?
Yeah.
Even if we don't,
Well, yeah.
He reigns.
Right. Yeah, he possessed land. So that's about all we know about him. Pastor.
What's always struck me about this is Abraham, kind of like us, as he's cruised around the countryside over the previous years, he had spotted that and knew it was there.
Mm-hmm.
And evidently had thought that would be a nice place
yeah.
to home someday to bury my loved one.
Yeah. Yeah. It doesn't tell us anything about Abraham went scouting around to find a place. It does seem like he had this place in mind.
I knew about it.
Yeah. Yeah. Because he specifically mentioned that. So verse 10, and Ephron dwelt among the children of Heth, and Ephron the Hittite answered Abraham in the audience of the children of Heth and even all that went in at the gate of the city, saying, now what usually takes place in the gate of the city, remember?
Business
transactions. That seems to be where all this took place. It's interesting as well here that it says, he answered Abraham in the audience of the children of Heth. We'll see that phrase several times as we go down through this. It's interesting. This was like a open discussion. This wasn't a closed door private meeting. Hey, I want to buy this piece of land. No, business was held. Everybody knew what was going on. It was out in the open. There was no secrets, nothing hidden. It was in the audience or in the presence of everybody there in the gate of the city. So he says, "Nay, my Lord, hear me, the field I give thee and the cave that is therein, and I give it thee in the presence of the sons of my people. Give I it thee, bury thy dead." So Ephron says, "You know what? I'll just give it to you. You can have it. And you can go ahead and bury the dead." Apparently, it's not, we talk about this cave of Machpelah, but apparently there's a sum of land, because he says, "The field give I thee and the cave that is therein." So whatever this possessed piece of land, it wasn't, sometimes we think of, okay, it was just the cave, but apparently it's the surrounding land, whatever that involved. So he says, "I'll give it to you." And Abraham bowed down again himself before the people of the land, and he spake unto Ephron in the audience of the people of the land, again, out in the open, "But if thou wilt give it, I pray thee, hear me. I will give thee money for the field. Take it of me. I will bury my dead there." So Abraham again says, thank you that you're going to give it to me, but I'd just as soon pay you for it. Exactly. And he doesn't even know what the price is yet. You notice that? Right. I don't think it matters at all. He knows what he wants, and that's what he's after. So Ephron answered Abraham and said unto him, "My Lord, hearken unto me. The land is worth 400 shekels of silver. And what is that betwixt me and thee? Bury therefore thy dead." So this is the first time we see a price put on the land. And basically Ephron is saying, it's worth 400 shekels of silver. And he says, "What's that between you and me?" He said, "That's not important. Go ahead. You can have it." Even though it's worth, different commentators said, did he inflate the price of the land or what? I don't know. It doesn't say here, so I'm not going to get into speculation whether it was actually worth that or not. But we see in the next verse, "And Abraham hearkened unto Ephron, and Abraham weighed to Ephron the silver which he had named in the audience of his sons of Heth, 400 shekels of silver, current money with the merchant." In other words, current currency there. So what's Abraham do? Okay, he bought it. Usually when you buy a piece of property, what do? You haggle on the price, don't you? You say, "Oh, really? Come on, how about, this?" A little bartering back and forth. Abraham does what? Says, "Nope, that's the amount you said, that's what I'll pay for it."
Maybe he didn't have time to haggle.
Well, it's not like he had to hurry. But Right, yeah.
He had to get her buried.
Yeah, I think you're right, along with he wanted that piece of property. He didn't care how much it cost. That's where he was going to bury him.
I was thinking, he was protecting the future.
Yeah.
In the future, no one say you cheated me, or if you didn't pay for it, they would take it back.
Yeah. As we get a little farther here, it'll tell us a little more about that. So it says, verse 17, "And the field of Ephron, which was in Machpelah, which was before Mamre, the field and the cave which was therein, and all the trees that were in the field." So here you get the idea that it's a plot of land, not just this one burial site, "that were in all the borders round about were made sure." This "made sure" means that the property was deeded, deeded to Abraham. And you're right, that protects that land as far as his possession. So official documents drawn up, the deed is given, and now everybody knows in the whole area, all these witnesses. So it's been witnessed, and deeded and signed over to Abraham that he owns this property. excuse me. Verse 18, unto Abraham for a possession in the presence of the children of Heth before all that went into the gate of the city. That's been mentioned several times, hasn't it? This is an open transaction and everybody knows what took place. So there's no debating this later about something that took place in closed rooms. After this, Abraham buried Sarah, his wife, in the cave in the field of Machpelah before Mamre, the same as Hebron in the land of Canaan. And the field and the cave that is therein were made sure again, deeded unto Abraham for possession of a burying place by the sons of Heth. This cave of Machpelah, we'll hear about this later on. Do you know who else was buried there? There's quite a few, actually.
Abraham.
Pardon me? Nope, I don't think Joseph was buried there. Oh, nope. Sarah, Abraham, Isaac. I had to look them up too. Leah, Rebecca, one more. Jacob was buried in this same cave. You know who's not buried in the cave, which is interesting? Rachel.
She died on the way, though.
Yeah, yeah. That could be, but it's just interesting that this same burial site is used, and again, Abraham purchased it, protected that, and then they used that for years to come. Okay, so we see this transaction that goes on, between Abraham and the people of the area here as far as a place, a burial site for Sarah. Chapter 24. And Abraham was old. No kidding, he's 137 years old. this circumstance here where the servant goes looking for a wife for Isaac. I'll get it in a second. We don't know exactly how long this took place or when this took place. We know that when Sarah was buried, Abraham was 137 years old. We know several chapters later that when Isaac took Rebekah to be his wife, he was 40 years old. So somewhere in that three-year time span, this circumstance took place here. So and Abraham was old and well stricken in age, and the Lord had blessed Abraham in all things. I find it interesting when I read this verse. Abraham was old and well stricken in age. What picture does that give you? Crippled. Yeah, crippled. Yeah, that's what you think of, right?
He didn't get any shots in his hip.
Yeah, exactly. Or in his knee, or a knee replacement, or anything else. You know what's interesting, and we'll get to this, it comes up in a couple chapters. You know what? After this, Abraham remarries.
And has
like five or six more sons and who knows how many daughters after this, even though he's, according to this, an old man and well stricken in age. It's just, when I read this, I kind of laugh. So Abraham says to his eldest servant of his house that ruled over all that he had. So his eldest servant was basically the steward of his land, basically ran the operation of what went on, is what it's saying here. And who is this individual? We don't know specifically. We know that in chapter 15, verse 2, Abraham talks about
Eliezer,
that's it, who he thought was maybe going to bear a son, and that's who he was going to give his inheritance to, and God says, no, I'm going to give you a son. So possibly it was this one, possibly someone else, we don't know. But he goes to his oldest servant, and obviously his oldest servant because he's the most trusted because he's got an important job for him to do. So he brings him in, and quite possibly this servant is better fit for the journey. After all, it's going to be quite a task that he gives him to do. And he says, "Put, I pray thee, thy hand under my thigh, and I will make thee swear or take an oath by the Lord, the God of heaven and the God of the earth, that thou shalt not take a wife unto my son of the daughters of the Canaanites among whom I dwell." So basically, what's he saying to his servant? You're going to go find a wife for my son. Kind of interesting, huh? She was the first to die in the promised land. Not that she was a daughter of the Canaanites.
She was a descendant of some Canaanite. Never mind.
Okay. So he's saying to his servant, I'm not going to pick out a wife for Isaac. You are. And on top of this, I think Isaac knew that the servant was going to get him a bride. So Isaac's got to trust that God is going to work out these circumstances, that his father's not picking a wife for him, but the servant is picking one. Now, obviously, Isaac knew this servant because this servant had been in the household and took care of everything. So he knew him, and they knew each other. But still, I don't know that my son would like me picking out a wife for him. Anybody know of a child who'd like to say, "Oh, sure, go ahead, Mom and Dad, you pick out the wife for me." So we see, remember, even when Abraham was going to offer Isaac, we saw Isaac's faith and compliance to God's desire and Abraham's fulfilling of that desire and following God's directions. And we see, again, Isaac, obviously in this circumstance, well, it's not recorded anywhere that he went in there and said, "I'm going to find her myself. What do you mean? I don't know who you're going to pick out for me." No.
It's also the custom, though.
Right, right, yeah. Right.
I also think that he, at that point, was trusting God more than anything that God would provide.
Yeah. It seems to imply that he was trusting God as well. So, anyhow, we'll get into this story more next week. Trust in God and his direction in our lives. Okay. Lord bless you this morning. You're dismissed.